listening to a special podcast produced by UMFM 101.5 in partnership with the Winnipeg Folk Festival. Running Thursday, July 11th through Sunday, July 14th at picturesque Birds Hill Park, Winnipeg Folk Festival is a celebration of people and music that has been one of North America's premier outdoor music festivals for over 40 years. I'm Michael Elves, host of Thank God It's Free Range, and this episode spotlights Rosalie. Rosalie, a North Carolina-based artist who grew up in a musical family, has quickly cemented herself as a singular songwriter over four records, including her most recent, Bite Down, which came out this spring on Merge Records. Rosalie performing on Sunday, July 14th at 3 p.m. at Baroque. For the full lineup, a complete list of set times to purchase tickets, and for more information on the Winnipeg Folk Festival, visit winnipegfolkfestival.ca. Well, coming to Winnipeg Folk Festival, Rosalie Middleman performs under the name Rosalie with a band sometimes, but we'll find out if she's bringing the band to the Folk Fest. She joins us. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So are you touring with a band or is it just you this trip?
No, I'll have my band, Mode Sound, the Omaha outfit.
Yeah, so obviously, I mean, the albums are credited to you, but you've had two records with this band. I mean, the way it came about sounds kind of natural. You were touring with them and kind of got along and they ended
up. Yeah, exactly. I was touring with my other band, Long Hots, and we were all in the same van. And they're just like the sweetest people, a lot of fun, incredible musicians, obviously. And yeah, that was a natural thing. They were just like, oh, we want to be your backing band for your next record. So that No Medium, that first record we made together, was kind of like, oh, this is just like a fun experiment in a way, and not really thinking it would be a repeat. But then touring a bunch with them on that record, we kind of realized that we really wanted to keep working together. A lot of magic there, and now we're just definitely like a band.
So it was the touring that kind of cemented things rather than the recording of the first record?
Yeah, I mean, the recording of the first record was a lot of fun, and we all we all had input on that and it was a lot of fun, but it was mostly touring, because I think we're all players in that way of just like, we like to expand and explore, and just the way we play live together really felt, and that's, we got to know each other a lot more deeply and form a very, very strong bonds, so that I think we just kind of felt like we were just getting started and we wanted to explore that relationship even further.
So the expanding and exploring isn't just with the songs themselves, but just with each other.
Absolutely. Yeah. And also knowing like that first record, you know, it was Dave Nance group that I kind of took and used as a band, and, you know, not expecting like, oh, that you would give up all this time and energy that you would focus on your own work to support me on a longer term basis. But I think we've all really felt the magic that we have together, that they're willing to go there with me. So it's been a really fun and expansive and magical experience for me. I'm extremely honored that they feel the same way about me as they do about them.
Well, speaking of being an expansive experience, I read that this recording took significantly longer, or you had more time, let's say, than with the first record?
Yeah, the first one we did in 10 days, for the most part, you know, with the actual tracking. And then this next one, I allowed more time. I had a little bit of a budget with this one, so I could kind of take more time off my life back home. So that we could actually explore. And with that, I also wanted to go in with the songs less fleshed out and like a decided, this is how the song goes, because we knew each other more, like I was saying, and I wanted them to all of us to kind of organically explore where they would go. The second one, I went to Omaha for 3 weeks instead of 10 days. So twice as long. And then I went again for 5 days to kind of finish it up like a few months later. So it was like a much longer in the tracking. And we also brought in another person, Ted Bois from Destroyer, who played keys, to actually be in the live band and not just like adding a part later on. So it's just like more cooks in the kitchen kind of scenario. But it was really fun. Like we sat in the round in the basement kind of exploring songs, and then would track them and track them a couple times to kind of get a feeling to where we were like, this is right, or no, this one needs more work or whatever. But yeah, it was kind of intense to work that way, because there's no like deadline in a way of like, oh, I'm leaving in 10 days, we got to finish this. But I think, I don't know where we got with the songs. Was I don't know, really special.
Usually when people talk about more cooks in the kitchen, it's like a negative thing, right? Like that it like spoils the broth is the other half of the saying, but like what, how did you avoid that?
Well, I'm sometimes like, we'd go down a path and be like, this isn't right, but that's okay. I think in some ways it's the trust I have in all of the musicians. We got to know Ted well too. We toured with Destroyer for a month, and he played with us every night on a few songs. And he was there only for 5 or 6 days, not the whole time. So it's just a mix of like we being really honest with each other, when like, no, I don't like where this is going. Let's, move on to something else, or let's shift it. But, because I think he was filling a role that none of us really, he's an incredible keys player. He had his take on things. So it wasn't like adding another guitarist, for example, where there's already three of them in the room. So I think in keeping it organic and playing those songs live, not just like, oh, let's do a bunch of overdubbing or something like that, where it could kind of go in endless directions. So it's just more about creating like a live atmosphere. Like I have a background in improvisation and experimentation, so that part of it felt really important to me to maintain that. So it's like kind of the players in the room, and what they bring to it, just I guess makes it more flavorful and not ruined.
Well, speaking of your background, I mean, you have a lot of different projects, and I'm curious if there's ever like any bleed between the different sort of things you do sonically. Like, do you find you can kind of either compartmentalize or write for a specific project, or do you find that kind of what you do in one spills over?
It's definitely been spilling over more and more. They used to be more separate, and I think when I was younger, I was kind of ascribing more to that, like, oh, I'm in this genre for this thing, or, I do this with this. Like Longhots were very much like, okay, this is our trio project, and this is the sound we have. It's the garage rock, Philly, tough sound, and then, my more like gentle folk songs, and then I had my just whatever, anything goes, noise music. But the older I get, it's like these are all just kind of facets within myself and my creativity. And I've always written songs starting out from kind of a stream of consciousness. Like no matter what I am writing for, it is just like a outpouring stream of consciousness, trying not to judge as I go, recording everything I do, and then editing and pulling from that. But now, like the older I've gotten, the more fluid it's become. I think that this record in particular, there it kind of bleeds more into like the guitar work I've done in the past, and some of those sonics. I'm just letting it all kind of be as it. I'm not trying to box anything in. And then I guess my solo guitar project, Edsel Axel, I mean, that I don't really write in a sense. Those are just total free form improvisations. So it's kind of like you're hearing maybe the thought process that I would have in writing a song, but without the words, if that makes any sense. sense.
For
And those are
sure.
for like the meditation purposes. Those are like for my own kind of cathartic. I need another outlet for like things, for these emotions and sonics that it's not gonna appeal to a broad audience, but it's for myself in that way.
So I read an interview you did with Bandcamp where you kind of described the influence of, Velvet Underground and Fleetwood Mac, and saying kind of this is, if Velvet Underground made a Fleetwood Mac record like Tusk, this is kind of what it would be like. How conscious are you of that in the moment when you're working on something, or is that something that, like, on reflection you can kind of see?
It's kind of on reflection for sure. Like, I don't like to go in with like, wanting to be a derivative of anything or like have it. This is something like in the beginning working with the Mode Sound crew, like they're like, well, can you give us, records? Because we didn't quite know each other yet. Like, where are you coming from? Kind of perspective. A record that you want this to sound like. I'm kind of like, well, I don't really want it to sound like anything but us. And I mean, I get the point, and that's what those tools are very useful, but I also don't want to be like, okay, yeah, let's make this sound like Fleetwood Mac, or like let's make this sound like Rolling Stones or whatever. There's a certain like, well, we all have this education and background and taste that is harmonious. So obviously we're gonna like have references that just naturally come out because that's what we've studied and that's what we're into. But it's just like on reflection, like, or when we finish, we're like, oh yeah, that really had like a Velvets vibe. Or oh, like sometimes even doing a take, like with My Kind, we're like, well, this is like too, the first time we play, like, oh, this is too Tusk or something. Let's like try to extract ourselves from that because we don't want it to fully reflect that. We want to just be us.
As far as your background, as I understand it, your parents were both touring musicians. Were they songwriters too?
They did somewhat. They didn't really tour that much. They played like locally.
Okay.
But there were, I mean, they had seven kids, so.
Yeah.
But they were musicians, and they played a lot of local shows, and they still are. They're alive. They still play music, and I don't know what you're. Sorry, I
So I was
interrupted.
asking, were they songwriters too? Because, some bands or kind of focus on covers and play out that way. But, did you get a schooling or like see someone doing songwriting growing up?
They weren't really songwriters. I think maybe they had written a couple songs, but no, they played a lot of covers, and they would do like kind of the like unknown, like the B-sides of things. But no, from that side, I didn't have an example, and I'm trying to think. But my siblings and I, we were all kind of like, we grew up in rural Michigan. And we would kind of write joke songs with each other. I think that's where it started, like just trying to be like one up each other and being clever and kind of making fun of each other in a really playful way. Like we would all do it together in a way. I think that's like the beginning of my songwriting. But then, in college when I was in bands, I started to write more seriously. And I think I just like was influenced by songwriters I liked, but also like I wrote a lot of kind of stream of consciousness poetry, and then it was just natural to kind of start putting that together with melodies I was writing.
So you've mentioned, starting to write joke stuff for your siblings. Like, at what point do you kind of consciously start to write like seriously? Like, is that college experience where you're kind of like coming into your own as a young adult?
Yeah, for sure. And I think just having that like kind of experience, like, oh, people, write a song with some friends, and like, oh, people like it. And then you play it, you've got your we had like four songs that we'd play at a show or something, and getting that feedback of like people are really enjoying this. And so that's I think I was probably like 18 or 19 when I actually started sharing songs I wrote. I think I probably wrote songs for myself, but then being a self-critical person. I was just like, oh, this isn't any good, and I was shy and I didn't want to share anything. So it wasn't until then that I feel like I started coming out of my shell and felt, ready to just kind of be brave and share a song, and not and also not be like too serious about precious, I guess, maybe not serious, but precious about what it was, you know.
You're saying that the overly critical part reminded me. Another interview that I'd read, I can't remember the source, but about like how if you maybe weren't, you're so self-editing that if you allowed yourself, you wouldn't write. Like you kind of have to be in the moment or just kind of like let it out, because if you
Yeah.
overanalyze it, you're never going to release something.
Absolutely. 'Cause sometimes even like with this record, when I was writing it, I was just like, I don't know, like I don't even know. Like there was like kind of I was feeling anxiety about it because I felt No Medium was a really important milestone record for myself. And I know like people connected with it, and I wanted to do something that was on the same level of songwriting. And I was just kind of was going into it, and also I was sober, and so it was like a new experience writing with a fully clear mind and which is when like the critic can really come out. But I just really had to kind of just let it come out because I was judging it. I was judging it and not sure, like, does this make sense? What am I trying to say? And then after we kind of were actually working on the songs together, I was like, oh my God, I know exactly, like, this makes perfect sense. Like, I let another part of myself take over so that the songs would make sense to me in the future. I don't know if that makes any sense. It's talking about songwriting is hard because it's like, where do these songs even come from? It can be kind of a mystery, but yeah, I just they didn't quite even fully make sense to myself until they were recorded.
No, that makes sense. I mean, forgive me if this is a bit of a personal question, but in terms of the drinking and then the decision to be sober, like, were you trying to quiet some of those like critical voices in your head?
No, I think I was just I think I was just done with it. I mean, part of like being a, I was trying to like level the peaks and valleys on an emotional level and trying to actually be more connected to my inner truth and not be, I don't know, I felt like emotionally out of control, and I was using drinking as a way, as a crutch. And so I needed to do it for my own mental health and physical health, but that I was drinking to quell those critical voices. And I think this is common. I've talked to a lot of other artists that, you think you need those couple glasses of wine to write, or whatever your substance of choice might be, just because it really does help thin the veils. And I think it can, you can access maybe a creative side quicker. It can be a shortcut until it isn't. So I had to come up with kind of new ways of getting there, and I just made it a dedicated practice. Like I would do a lot of just kind of meditating and breath work, and I think having kind of a making it a more of a spiritual practice to connect to like the muses in that sense, that it wasn't so much like, okay, I don't know, there less of a wildness in my connection to my creativity. It was more, definitely more of a grounded devotion to it.
Well, speaking of wildness, I read that, so like the title track is essentially like going further than leaning in. That
Yes.
like really hunkering down is kind of the impetus behind it. Like, is that a thought that came to you and you wanted to kind of pursue that in song, or like how did that kind of
Well, this song,
thought process come about?
I mean, it I started writing that song Bite Down in 2020. And I was walking around a lot and just like, that was the first line that came out. It was just like, help me, love, I can't seem to bite down on it. And like that idea of bite down, like, like understanding something, like getting a grip on something, because, that time for all of us was very, very unknown, very difficult. And yeah, this like the severity of like a biting on something instead of just like I'm leaning in, like I'm pushing. It's just like, no, I want to like get a grip. I want, so like those words came out first, kind of just like on their own. And then what, and kind of like, oh, I'll bite down. What, what does that mean to me? And that just, it kind of became a mantra in a sense, of like how I was feeling in life. And that, like, that was like getting sober. That was, working on all the things that, one works on for self-improvement, for like feeling like they're growing and finding clarity and feeling strong, and not trying to dwell in despair and fear and worry, even though there's plenty of opportunities for us to go that direction. So yeah, the song came first, and then I really wanted to, yeah, explore that more and what that meant overall, on just kind of the energy that I wanted the record to have.
Is that why it's the title track?
Yeah, partly. I was trying to come up with a title, and I mean that was definitely the energy that was there. And then when I was talking to Mac, who is one of the owners of Merge, he was like, I think that would be a great title. And I was like, you know what? I think you're right. So it was kind of like there as the presence of an energy, but then like what, the more I thought about it, yeah, the songs that were already existed and in their, being fully realized stage when the album title was decided on.
Well, speaking of those songs, I want to get you to pick one off of the record that we can play for listeners. And if you have a reason why you're picking it or an anecdote, we'd love to hear that.
Oh, I'm trying to think one. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe play Hopeless. That would be a good one. That was one that we struggled to find the right vibe for on the record. We did a couple different versions of it. Then first it started out much more like in a darker realm and like slower, and it just wasn't right. And then when I ended up having to do vocals after our 3-week session in Omaha because I'd gotten sick and my voice wasn't, I couldn't sing. So I was doing vocals back home with my friend Alex Bingham, and he plays bass with His Golden Messenger. Like, I live in North Carolina, so I'm around a lot of those folks, and he's got a little studio. And I was like, Alex, I'm trying to figure out this song. And we like kind of just set up like a drum machine beat, and I was playing guitar with it because I'd done a new version at home just to like, that was faster and more upbeat. And I'm like, I don't want this song to be sad. I know it's called Hopeless, but it's not sad. It's definitely more carefree in this way, or just like accepting. And so we kind of just like worked out the vibe, and then I sent that to the guys, and we reframed the whole song. So I don't know. That would be a good example. Well, now it's just like, I think it's a fun song to dance to. It definitely captures more of the vibe of the song that I was going for.
Well, we'll give that one a listen. I know this is the question that always seems to stump artists, so.
It's like, oh, I can talk about my work, but then I'm like, oh, you actually want to listen to
Yeah. All right. Well, we will give that one a listen. Looking forward to seeing you at the Folk Fest, Rosalie. Thanks very much for taking some time to talk.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I can't wait.
I won't.
I'm Michael Wells, and you've been listening to a special podcast spotlighting Rosalie, who will be performing on Sunday, July 14th at 3 p.m. at Burr Oak at the Winnipeg Folk Festival. To hear more featured artists, visit umfm.com, and be sure to visit winnipegfolkfestival.ca to get tickets to this great event running July 11th through 14th at Birdsill Park.